Now, as we mentioned in the introduction earlier, both Robin Hood and Dick Turpin have become folk heroes, along with many others. They've been glamorised and romanticised, even when they've killed. But where are their female equivalents? Well, hopefully here to answer that, we have Caitlin Davis. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. It's fascinating stuff. I don't know what it is about human beings that become fascinated about things, people like this, because they shouldn't be, really, should they? They shouldn't be celebrated. They're infamous. They're naughty people.
Well, I think with my Queens of the Underworld, I very deliberately wasn't setting out to sort of glorify them, you know, or what they did. It was more to start off with trying to find these women, you know, that we've heard of, you know, as you said, Dick Turpin, and we've heard of Ronnie Biggs, and we've heard of the Crays, and we've heard of so many male crooks. And I just thought, well, where are the women? Where are the women? Where are the women that were doing these things? Were the women doing these things? And if there were, then I wanted to find them and sort of, you know, bring them back to life so we can understand what they did. Not so much to celebrate what they did because they were committing crime, but to just to take them seriously and try and work out, you know, what's the truth here? What did they do and why did they do it? And
yeah, fair
why
enough.
Did they enjoy it?
Fair enough. It's all part of history. And there are plenty. You've found plenty. I've been reading about all of them. If we can just take a few. So who was Moll Cutpurse? What a great name.
Yeah, Moll Cutpurse is a good name, isn't it? And she got it from the fact that she was going around cutting purses in the early 1600s. So her real name was Mary Frith, and she started off as just a street pickpocket and thief. But she then had about a 50-year criminal career and was pretty much running the underworld in Jacobean London. And what she did, which was clever, is she set up a warehouse, which she called a brokery, on Fleet Street in London, in the city of London. And every thief would bring their stolen goods, you know, to her, all the watches and the gold and the silver and everything they'd nicked. And then everybody who'd had something stolen would go to her as well. And she would say, okay, give me the details, you know, let me know what was stolen and what did it look like and when and where did it happen. And then she'd say, you know, check back with me tomorrow or in a couple of days. And when they did, she'd say, well, I found your stolen watch. And then she basically sold it back to them for a finder's fee.
Terrible.
So, you know, very, very smart woman.
Very,
very successful.
Smart.
Yeah, lived a long life and died pretty wealthy as well.
And that was when? Was that the 17th century, did you say?
That was in the 1600s. That was around, I think, the first time she was on trial was 1611.
Right.
And she died in the 1650s.
And what about the Black Boy Alley ladies? Who were they?
The Black Boy Alley, well, there was a Black Boy Alley gang, and they operated around Clerkenwell, again in London. Most of these women operated in London. And they were one of the most fearsome street gangs of the 18th century, so around 1744. Partly this is because it was whipped up by the press. So, you know, the press were full of stories of the Black Boy Alley gang and how terrifying they were. And there was at least 8 women in the gang, and they were sometimes referred to as the Black Boy Alley ladies. And basically, they were street robbers. They were highway robbers. So on the whole, they would pretend to be prostitutes, approach a man in the street, say, I know a bar, you know, let's go there and buy me a drink. And then when they got him drunk, they just robbed him and then moved on to the next one.
Crikey. And then we come a little bit further nearer to the future. So the 1920s, there was a duo called Alice Diamond and Maggie Hughes.
Yes, they've got lovely names, some of them, haven't they?
Just? Are these their real names from what you found?
Oh, yes, they are. Yeah. But my goodness, did they use a lot of aliases. I mean, trying to track women down is hard enough anyway when you're trying to, you know, look at historical archives and documents, etc. It's difficult anyway to find women. But if the women were professional thieves, then they lied about everything, their names, their ages, their date of birth, their, you know, their family members, their occupation, and they moved around a lot. And it was obviously in their interest not to be found. And now I'm I'm trying to find them. So that took a while. But yeah, Alice Diamond and Maggie Hughes, they led. Well, Alice was the queen of the 40 Elephant Gang, and Maggie was her fearsome lieutenant. And the 40 Elephants really came into their own about the 1920s, and it was an all-female crime syndicate, a shoplifting crime syndicate, and operated all over the UK. So they were extremely professional and well-organised and successful. And actually, the roots of the 40 Elephants lay in a much earlier, again, all-female gang from the late Victorian times. And originally they were called the 40 Thieves. And then they became the 40 Elephants, mainly because they would go into a department store one size and come out several sizes larger because they had all the fur coats stuffed down their hoisters, bloomers.
And one lady who did wear a fur coat, certainly in court, known as Lady Jack, was Elsie Florence Carey in the 30s.
Yes, well, I don't think she wore a fur coat. What was sort of newsworthy about her is that she ran a male shop-breaking gang, travelling around the country breaking into shops. And she actually, on one of her last arrests, when they got her in the back of the car, the police had been trailing this car, and they actually jumped onto the running board and flagged it down and got her out. And she was wearing, to their shock and horror, she was wearing in flannel trousers and a trilby hat and a man's scarf, etc. And she wore those clothes when she was on trial as well, which was a very brave thing to do. And so you had headlines like 4 years in prison for woman in man's clothes. It wasn't against the law to wear man's clothes, whereas it was in Moll Cutpurse's day in the 17th century. She too had been arrested for wearing men's clothes. So there's a bit of a theme here. You know, if you wore men's clothes, you could get away with stuff that you couldn't if you were wearing what were considered women's clothes.
Yeah. And there are so many, and you start at the 17th century and a bit more up to date in the 80s was Joan Hannington. Wasn't she a diamond thief?
Joan Hannington was a diamond thief, yes, and she was she swallowed diamonds. That was her main method. But I find it really interesting that some of her methods that she was using, as you say, in the 1980s, actually I came across them being used in the 1880s, like the chewing gum method, for example, and using a bit of chewing gum to swap a real piece of jewellery with a fake piece of jewellery. And so actually some of the methods she was using were at least 100 years old, but she really refined the swallowing diamonds. And in case you're wondering, she would then use a bottle of the first theft was in Hatton Gardens in the 70s, I think it was, and she then went home and drank a bottle of castor oil.
Oh my God.
Let nature do its work.
Oh yes. Oh my goodness. She was a slave to her art, wasn't she? For sure.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because these women saw crime as their job. It was work, and they also saw it as an art form. That they had perfected. They were proud of it. It wasn't something that they were hiding. The problem is they've been hidden. You know, all these women have been just wiped out of the history books.
And did you find that they were doing it for that reason, and they were doing it to get money, or were they vicious? Did they hurt people? Because that's going one step too far.
I sort of had a rule for myself when I started the book, is I wanted to find women that would be happy to call themselves a queen of the underworld. I wanted to see, you know, women who did enjoy themselves and who did consciously choose a life of crime and didn't have regrets about that. And I wanted women who were not violent, because women who kill, there's so few of them and they've been endlessly covered. And I wanted women who weren't victims, but, as I say, chose to lead a life of crime. Of course, that turned out to be impossible, because, you know, most of these women had been victims in one way or another, at least to begin with.
Yeah.
And to begin with, it was nearly always motivated by need. It would start off with, you know, stealing food to support the family was, you know, often how it started.
Yeah.
And also, inevitably, some of them were violent. Maggie Hughes was violent. Couple of other women, particularly women in the 40 Thieves and the 40 Elephants, were violent. And I think actually they've been particularly wiped out of history, because, you know, it's okay for male criminals to go around boasting about how they, you know, how they use razors and how they ran gangs and how they were king of the underworld and etc. But if women did it, that made people very uncomfortable. And so they've, those women have been very much, you know, pushed to one side.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it, human nature, how it seems worse when it's a woman.
Yes, exactly. And women were always sort of slotted into one or two roles, you know, either they were these sort of alluring temptresses that decoyed men and pretended to be what they weren't, or on the other hand, they were supposedly aping men and wanted what men had. They weren't allowed to simply be women who were criminals. And if you look at the names of some of the gangs, you know, you had the Happy Hoisters in the 1950s and 60s, led by Shirley Pitts. And you had the Happy Firm in the 1970s, run by Chris Tchaikovsky. That gives you an idea that, you know, they were having fun.
Yeah. Who was the latest one? Was Joan Hannington in the 80s, or have you got somebody later than that?
I think the last one in the book is Jotty DeLory, who stole several million from Goldman Sachs. I think it was in 2013. Wow. So I think she's the most up-to-date one. But another one of my favourites is Noreen Harbutt, who ended up running a hotel in Mallorca. And that was one of the first package tour destinations. And she used to be queen of the contraband coast in the 1950s. And she was, you know, running around between Tangier and Gibraltar and, you know, up and down the coast, North Africa and Southern Europe. Smuggling gold, mainly. Crikey. Gold, cigarettes and nylons. And after she'd been imprisoned in the UK, she then moved to Spain and opened the Hotel Costa Brava.
Oh, very close to home.
Yes.
And presumably they're all in chronological order in your book. You start from the 17th
they
century.
They are in chronological order.
Brilliant. Yes. And why do you think it is that we do hear so much about men and these women have been lost in history? Did you find out why?
In a way, it's sort of a short answer. And then on the other hand, it's a very long answer, because at the time, these women were very well known. I mean, they were all over the place. You know, there were moral panics about these women. There were newspaper headlines. They were on TV. There were, you know, they were held up as sort of everything that could go wrong if women had equal rights, basically. And then as times changed and the women didn't sort of serve that purpose anymore, they started to be edited out, because it makes people uncomfortable, because what they were doing everything that women were not supposed to do. So they were from wearing men's clothes or skippering yachts on the contraband coast or driving getaway cars or being burglars or being bank robbers and having guns, and they were taking risks, you know, and they were flaunting, and they were just sort of like, you know, mocking the police and you know, being cheeky to judges that were trying to sentence them and send them to prison. So these are not the role models that we're sort of given to, you know, to understand and to sort of be entertained by. They were like, I think, you know, well, the women were just cut out. But I mean, in the last few years, these women are being rediscovered. They are coming back. And I'm hoping that anyone that reads the book will get in touch with me and fill in a lot of gaps. There's still a lot of gaps about, you know, these women's lives and what happened to them, because what I wanted to do was to track down modern day descendants and ask them, what did your mum really do? What
yes.
did your aunt?
Yes, how what interesting. And I tell you what, I've been looking at your website, Caitlin, and there's lots of great information on there. You've got documents and photographs all from your research, which I just find fascinating. Yeah, really fascinating. And that is for any of our listeners to have a look at. It's CaitlinDavis.co.uk, that is correct, isn't it? That's what I have written down
yes.
here. And the book is called Queens of the Underworld, A Journey into the Lives of Female Crooks. And it is, of course, by Caitlin Davis, and we're selling it on our website. Do please let me know if you have any more books out, Caitlin, because I really find all this history fascinating. It's been great chatting to you.
You too. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.